Hi there. This is Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated to Ring of Honor. My name is Harvey R. Padgett. I cover ROH for the PW Torch. I will have a full in-depth primer for this Friday's Death Before Dishonor 16 up on the website later this week with backstories for every match. If you haven't been watching regularly, if you haven't seen all the house shows, the Honor Club events, full primer detailing each feud, each story going into that show later this week. And then Friday night I will have live coverage of Death Before Dishonor happening. You can read along with me up at PW Torch. I am joined, as always, by Emily Fear.
Hi, Harley. How's it going?
Oh, it's all right.
Yeah. I tell you what, this episode, like, put me back in the mood for more summer. What with Kenny King and his pool floats. I felt like it was a very odd. Well, they're in Philadelphia when they were filming this, and it was summertime, but like, it just was a very weird feeling, like being at the end of September, kind of in a cool, drizzly day, watching a guy throwing around like a sun hat and pool floaties.
Well, I think it was because of, it was in a nod to Bachelor in Paradise.
Yes. Yeah. With the roads on the tights and everything like that.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, I, you know, Kenny is kind of fascinating right now because of his, like, dual careers and his unique place in the Bachelor universe, where he keeps leaving.
Well, even seeing, I felt like hearing Dalton Castle's music was a throwback to be like, whoa, it's been so long, it's been months.
Oh my gosh, yeah, we'll have to talk about that, because I, as much as I love seeing the boys, there was this, like, kind of pang of sadness that, like, it wasn't Castle. I need him to come back.
Well, before we get into this week's episode of television and our full Death Before Dishonor predictions, a little bit of news this week. When Deonna Purrazzo left Women of Honor to go to NXT, we were raising some questions, like, what does this mean for the women's division? Does this free up cash so they can hire somebody new? They're going to need, like, a strong baby face to kind of fill Deonna's vacancy in a way. And it would appear this week that we got the answer to that, because Madison Rayne has signed with Women of Honor.
Yep. That felt kind of inevitable, right? Like, Madison's done a lot of time with Ring of Honor. She was in All In. She recently competed on a television episode for the title against Sumi Sakai. Like, yeah, it kind of felt like we were building towards, you know, having a regular stay with Madison, and awesome. I mean, Madison's, like, she's 32. She's a vet. She's been through pretty much every iteration of TNA and Impact for the last, you know, however many years, along with lots of work on the indie circuit. She's come back from injury. She's looking pretty phenomenal, you know, given that she's still in the state of coming back. So, yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was a little bit of, I wouldn't say it was inevitable, because she's been everywhere this summer. She was competing for the Mae Young Classic, so she had got signed to NXT. Wouldn't have been crazy. She wrestled for Impact again. She has a long history with them, so if she had decided to make regular appearances there, that kind of worked out too. So, I was a little surprised to find out, oh, she signed full-time with ROH. But that's exciting. And it's a sign of the strength and the what respect or whatever ROH has at the moment, that they're able to sign people like her and Flip Gordon to full-time exclusive contracts. Because obviously Madison and Flip are pretty much desirable anywhere they want to go.
Free agents, they can work everywhere. I mean, Madison, honestly, you know, given her established cred, she can work at any indie. She can go, she can tour, she can go, she's been in Japan, she can go back to Japan. Yeah, so she getting any kind of exclusive contract with her is a big get for ROH. It really is. And you make a good point about the fact that, like, she could have just as easily gone back and done more time with Impact. Even though I was excited for her to get to be in the Mae Young, I didn't see her signing with NXT, partially because, and this is not my bias, this is, you know, firmly my impressions when it comes to Vince and those behind the talent in WWE. I imagine that she might be a little older than they like to recruit for NXT as far as their women's talent.
Yeah, I would think so. But I mean, Mickie James just re-signed with WWE about a year or two ago, and so sometimes they'll bring back somebody as to play the sort of veteran hand.
Yeah, but Mickey's been with the company for a long time, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, her re-signing isn't as much of a surprise as, say, them finally signing Madison, given how far along she is in her career. And honestly, for Madison, I don't really see the benefit for her playing that part in WWE when she could go and have a lot more versatility and flexibility in roles that are not WWE. And yes, I am wearing my bias on my sleeve right now, but like,
No,
I'm glad that she's at our age.
yeah, I agree. She'd probably end up being enhancement talent in WWE, knowing them. Whereas in ROH, I mean, you always need a certain number of veteran or experienced talent in a division to help work with the younger and the newer people, especially in a company like ROH, right? So now we have a chance to see she can do that, but she can also still be relevant at the time, I think. So if Sumi Sakai is kind of playing the Christopher Daniels role in Women of Honor, then Dashwood and Rain can be the Jay Lethal and whomever, right? Like Madison is definitely in the Jay Lethal role where she spent a lot of time in TNA. Now she's here in ROH, but she's not like past her prime. She's not washed up or anything. She's still capable of being champion, of being one of the top names on the show.
Yeah, no, and a smaller house for her is going to benefit her extremely because, in the grand sea of the deep, deep bench of the women's talent in WWE, she probably would be enhancement. And in Women of Honor, she's going to be in a much smaller pool. I think the Jay Lethal comparison is a really good. She gets to be someone who's been around for a while, isn't quite to like elder, stateswoman or whatever, but like she's someone who like has been a part of building the indie scene in the last however many years. So she gets to bring that into Ring of Honor directly. And I think that that's going to be a really good fit for her. And I'm excited to see matches and storylines built with her and like actually, ingrained in Women of Honor, because when she's not there, like consistently, and we've had a little bit of a flux with Women of Honor recently, so we haven't gotten consistent storylines or a build towards a really credible storyline. We haven't had a good rivalry since Deonna and Kelly Klein kind of burned out in the wake of Deonna signing with NXT. So Madison's signing to ROH for Women of Honor is a really positive step, a positive sign that we're going to be investing some more time in these storylines, building rivalries, building alliances, building all the stuff that makes a division really exciting. So I'm excited to see what they do.
Yeah, hopefully the fact that they're signing anybody is a good sign for the women's division. We need to get to the point where, especially on these Honor Club live events, these house shows, whatever, where we've got more than one women's match on the card. I know it's tough. Like you're fighting for space on a roster where everybody's talented and everybody, looking at Death Before Dishonor, we could have added Kelly Klein versus Jenny Rose since they've kind of began a little bit of a feud. But what would you knock off in place, right? Almost every match on the card is a title match other than King and Liger. So, I think on the Honor Club events for sure, there's got to be a way to find some space for some more women. Because right now we're getting Sumi and her Challenger of the Month. But beyond that, I mean, we don't see Jenny Rose or Karen Q all that often. Even Kelly Klein, I feel like we haven't seen her in weeks and weeks. And then, what is Stella Gray a full-time member of ROH? Because I'm not even sure.
She just popped in my head the other day, and I was like, where the heck has Stella Gray been? I know Kelly's been in Japan, apparently killing it in Japan, which
Yeah,
is
she's been at
great.
Stardom tournaments, so that might be part of it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I'm so thrilled for her because I don't know. I'm coming around to Kelly Klein recently. I had rewatched a couple of the matches in the spring, watched some stuff like prior to that. I still think that she definitely is a better silent threat as far as the type of heel that she plays. I think the like strong, menacing, silent type, similar to Martinez. But man, I'm looking forward to her coming back to Women of Honor because I like what they're doing with her and with her and Jenny, and that's got some promise. Jenny's a good face. Like, yeah, but you're right. Signing talent in general is a really positive sign. And putting, you know, probably a reasonable amount of money into signing Madison is also a really good sign, because it means that they're making a deeper investment for Women of Honor.
Yeah. So now we just need to see. We need to give them the chance to pay some dividends by getting them out there more and doing stuff more. Like, yeah. Does Mandy Leon still wrestle?
I think that she does. I think she might have been out on injury, but she was on commentary for something recently.
Yeah, I just feel like I don't think I've seen her wrestle since the championship tournament back in the spring.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's been a little while. I know that she's been with the commentary team on at least something, maybe a Women of Honor match, or wait, was she wasn't one of the women who was on commentary for All In for the women's match, was she?
It was Dashwood and somebody. Maybe it was Mandy.
Man. Well,
I don't even know.
It's been a while since we've seen her in the ring. That's for sure.
And Brandi Rhodes is healthy again, apparently. But we haven't seen her wrestle. So give her something to do other than a YouTube cooking show.
Yeah, which is delightful. And I'm enjoying, you know, I enjoy whenever she, you know, appears ringside and takes the bumps that she takes so well. But yes, Brandy's healthy again. Let's see her wrestle. It's weird that she's been around now for a month or two, healthy, fairly completely healed, and we still haven't gotten to see her in ring.
Well, now that it's getting colder out in our parts of the world, not everywhere, but in our parts of the world, it's starting to get colder again. There's going to be a lot more live events and Honor Club events coming up. October and November are pretty packed. You got Global Wars, Glory by Honor, Survival of the Fittest, bunch of TV tapings and stuff. So hopefully this will be the time for the women to shine.
Yeah, absolutely. Get those women on the cards. Get more than one. My God, come on. At least, at the very least, for your house shows. I went to an NXT tour show recently and they had two really good, you know, solid women's matches, one of which was a tag match, one of which was a singles match. If you can't, like, if you can't match that for a tour show, like, that's, I don't know. I think we can do a little bit better. I know that they can. I know that they're interested in doing better, so I would like them to follow through.
All right. Well, this week on TV, our main event, final show before Death Before Dishonor, it was Jay Lethal and Jonathan Gresham teaming together again to take on Bully Ray and Silas Young. Last time Lethal and Gresham teamed together, it was over in the UK, and they defeated the Young Bucks clean. I forgot about that until they mentioned it before the match, and I was like, oh, right.
Yeah.
That was huge at the time. At the time, it was like, what? It was like Young Bucks' second loss all year or something like that in ROH, and they lost to this makeshift team of Lethal and Gresham.
Yeah, it was very surprising to me that they lost to Lethal and Gresham, but in hindsight, maybe it shouldn't have been, because I think that they're telling a long story with Lethal and Gresham. And I think that part of that was the Iron Man match and the lead up to that. Part of that was their you know, tag team win over the Bucks. But yeah, I'm curious where they're going with this, because I actually not entirely sure where it's going. But I like that we had that win to kind of build on coming into this match.
Well, and then the last time Bully Ray and Silas Young teamed together, they lost to the Best Friends when Bully just walked out of the match halfway through and told Silas that he had gone soft, basically. So I was fully convinced that the Babyfaces were going to win here. Initially, when they announced the match, when we were going into this week's TV, I thought, oh, Babyfaces is definitely going to pick the win here. But then they announced a tables match for Death Before Dishonor, Ray and Silas against Flip and Colt Cabana. And once that was announced, you had to know the heels were winning.
Yeah, that's the kind of announcement that maybe they should have held off on making until after this episode, because they have been releasing this card very, very slowly. So see why that couldn't come out after this match aired.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, notsam.com, wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week with the state of wrestling. Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
But yeah, after you get two relatively new teams, one has a tag match at a pay-per-view, the other half of the other team isn't even on the card, obviously the one team's going to win.
Yeah.
It was just a question of how, and it was Bully Ray, so it was the classic, look the other way, and a low blow.
Low blow, and then of
Bully
course,
Ray's young. Finishing move.
Yeah. Oh boy, yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, Young capitalized on it with his finisher, and, you know, Gresham took the pin.
Yeah, I will say, at the same time, I was kind of conflicted during this match as to how they would pick up the win, who would win, because I felt like everybody needed that momentum. You're not going to have your world champion pinned five, 6 days before the pay-per-view. Silas Young is trying to get like revitalized with his big attack on Lethal last week, so to have him get pinned again would undercut all of that. For Ray to get pinned would, like, it, the whole point of tuning in the pay-per-view is to see him get his comeuppance. You don't want him to get it now. And then for Gresham to get pinned, it's like, well, he's just riding all this momentum coming out of the Iron Man match. Do we just have him go back, right back to taking another pin? But I do say he's probably the most logical option here because he's being positioned as he's the ultimate underdog, the new ultimate underdog. Daniel Bryan isn't an underdog anymore. Gresham is the new underdog. So the more wins that he picks up like that, or more losses he picks up like this, especially off of a distraction and a low blow, it just helps his case and makes us want to rally behind him even more.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the underdog title is pretty well suited to Gresham. I think that he is the type of face that makes his underdog stature really easy to root for. I'm conflicted sometimes when it comes to faces who are painted as underdogs. I personally just never have been a huge Flip Gordon fan and will never particularly like get behind a story that's like painting him as any kind of underdog. But the same is not true for Gresham, who is innately talented and likable and scrappy in a way that, like, you know, even when he eats a pin like this, the crowd is just like completely popped for him. They will you know, absolutely fall for him. So yeah, it doesn't hurt him to take the pin here, and it only continues his momentum and his rather rapid rise in profile in Ring of Honor right now.
Except for the fact that he's not on the pay-per-view. We have 7 matches announced. There's a lot of pay-per-views where you'll do 8 matches. 8 is kind of standard for a WWE pay-per-view. Mind you, the 10-man tag, there's a good chance that that'll go very long. So that might be the equivalent of 2 matches. I don't know. I mean, do we get a bonus match with Gresham? You know, he's being interviewed and Jeff Cobb attacks him or something instead? Or he's talking about, or, you know, Matt Taven shows up and picks a fight with Gresham, knowing that Gresham and Lethal are good friends and Taven wants Lethal's title.
Yeah, we have a number of players who don't have specific roles that they're filling right now in this pay-per-view. And it's going to be interesting to see if they do get incorporated in some way. I don't know. I understand that it suits the story, but I wish it was Colt Cabana and Jonathan Gresham taking on Young and Bully Ray in a tables match, because first of all, I don't think you get to see Gresham in a tables or a similar setup very often. And also, I mean, this is a moment to capitalize on the momentum we've had in the last couple of weeks. It would make sense. It would be really, galvanizing, and also do a ton for Gresham's stature in Ring of Honor. But I understand why they keep working in Flip, and they're going to do what they want to do with that storyline, so I'm not going to quibble. But yeah, I'm not holding out hope. I guess I would really enjoy seeing Gresham be worked into the pay-per-view in one way or another, whether it's a late announcement for a match or they figure out another way to do it. Maybe he's on commentary and something happens. There's any number of ways that that could be worked. Because I'm too worried about being disappointed.
Yeah, I think if you asked Colt, as far as a tables tag team match, I think he'd rather team with Flip than Gresham, because Flip Gordon's arsenal is perfectly suited for putting somebody through a table. I don't know how Gresham would put somebody through a table.
That's the fun of it. I don't know either, and that's kind of why we've kind of seen this with Flip. Like we've seen different versions of this with Flip. We saw him in a six-man ladder match back at Supercard. Like, and I am interested to see Gresham in that environment. And maybe that's not something that Gresham particularly wants to do as a performer. Maybe that's not his wrestling wheelhouse, and that is totally legit and fine. But if it is, or if it's something that they could work with, I want to know how Jonathan Gresham puts someone through a table, because that's very that's a very interesting combination of his skill set and a setting that doesn't typically get associated with that skill set.
I'm picturing they lean a table against the top turnbuckle in the corner. Gresham puts a submission move on the guy against the table, and they just slowly, slowly, slowly bend it until it breaks. It takes like 4 minutes for the table to snap, and then the ref's like, yeah, that counts.
That's some prime like tension-based storytelling right there.
Zoom ins on the slowly splintering and the cracking of the table.
Yeah. Well, what if it was his octopus hold or a submission hold on one of the guys? I mean, either guy is fairly big, and he knocks him out, and the guy falls through a table.
Sure. Yeah, he'd have to do the octopus like on the top rope. Bully passes out, and then he pushes Bully off the top rope through the table.
I could see him doing an octopus on Young on a top rope. That actually would be really cool. That would be a really interesting spot.
All right. I
am not a huge fan of, so it, tables match, does that mean we're going to be seeing like lots of tables in ring?
Most likely. That's the Bully Ray motif. That's the Dudley Boys history, right?
Yeah, that to me makes sense. And also it follows the same logic as like a ladder match where like, you know, the ladders are in the ring, and you're right, this is an ECW type mainstay. But I'm just not a fan of it. I always think it looks weird having the tables like up in the ring. I understand. And I guess if it's a tables match, then it is a no DQ, right?
Yeah. Only one way to win. Put your opponent through a table.
Put your opponent through a table. All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see who gets that. We'll have to talk about... Okay, we'll be talking about predictions.
Yeah. The only other thing that jumped out from this match for me, I mean, Lethal and Gresham, tons of chemistry. We saw it last week in their backstage promo. We've built up this relationship, this friendship, really naturally over time. And I love that. It never felt thrown together by any means. And so a thought occurred to me, which is, the last time Jay Lethal was world champion, his reign was really notable because he had two titles at the same time. He was the television champion, he challenged for the world title, he won the world title, and he carried both belts for a good length of time before losing the television title and then eventually the world title, of course. That was his first reign. Now that he's in his second reign, what about Lethal being world champion and tag champion at the same time?
Oh, okay. All right.
Because I'm just thinking, I mean, Briscoes are defending against SCU this Friday, so there's a chance Daniels and Kaz could win the titles. But if they didn't, Lethal and Gresham versus the Briscoes for the tag titles would be a heck of a feud, and that would be a really fun payoff, would be Lethal holding two titles again, and Gresham holding his first championship gold in ROH.
Yeah, wow. I like that. I don't think that that's going to happen the way you proposed based on my predictions, but we'll talk about that. But I do like that, and I think it's an interesting way to give Lethal back his like kind of two title cred without returning to the same exact two titles. And another way in which we build Jonathan Gresham, which like I'm such a mark for Jonathan Gresham. I really am. I think he's just phenomenally talented. ROH is rather lucky to have the kind of access to him, we'll say, right now, because I just I keep seeing this guy like blow up bigger and bigger. So right now they have tenuous grasps on a number of, you know, established really big stars. And they also have tenuous like growing grasp on a couple of like the, you know, biggest growing stars. So it's an exciting time for talent in ROH, but I just want to make sure that they're treating their guys right. So that those guys stick around for a while.
Well, okay, while we're talking about the top talent and future huge stars, Jeff Cobb returned again this week.
Another round of the Top Prospect Tournament.
It was a fun running gag while it lasted. It's over now. That much is clear.
It's over.
And it was interesting because it seemed like they had the idea earlier. So I want to say it was back in like spring or summer. We had this gag used once where we were told this was the opening round of Top Prospect Tournament. Bully Ray interrupted, beat up both guys, and then I think was confronted by Cheeseburger afterwards. And then they put it away on the back shelf, and then a couple months later, I guess, once they signed Cobb, they're like, oh, that was too good of an idea to use once. And so they haven't mentioned the Bully Ray thing, and they brought it back for Cobb, and Cobb interrupted three matches.
Yes. The Bully Ray one, I think at least one was done at the TV taping that I went to, the one that they had in Pittsburgh in April. So, okay.
That might have been the one then.
Yeah, because I think that the match he interrupted involved I can't remember both of the guys, but I'm pretty sure one of the guys was
Sassad and Eli Isom.
That's right. Well, okay, so I got to see the most adorable puppy in the puppy pile versus one of our local big guys.
The Neon Ninja.
Yeah, Fassad, who I actually just saw recently in another outdoor show. But yeah, so kind of memorable there. But yeah, so now that they've done this three straight times with Cobb, they finally put a pin in it, which I'm actually really glad that they did. I think that they picked a right time to cut this off.
Yeah, I will say, though, I loved the commitment to the gag, like the picture promos every week for these Future of Honor guys. And they're always a little cheesy and a little goofy, and that's fun. Like, it was a nice little touch.
Yeah, it made me feel, I don't know, I guess there's always going to be a part of this in wrestling where it did make me feel a little bit bad because basically these guys who, some of whom are probably, you know, local talent, some of whom, you know, are maybe they have jobbed for ROH before. It's just, I guess, in the wrestling ecosystem, jobbers have a place. It's just, for me, this joke was kind of coming at the expense of some guys who are, you know, they're probably well liked and appreciated on in their local indies, and they're basically being used as just like, you know, like, bales of hay to be tossed around.
Well, I assume that they were all Future of Honor Dojo, like ROH Dojo guys.
Yes, assumed it.
Young guys who haven't, you know, they're not a big name who's being treated like a joke here. They're a no name who's just starting their careers.
Yeah,
and this is a fun way to get some TV time and.
Yeah, I mean that's okay. Yeah, you're right, and that's a better way to. I mean, honestly, that's a better fate for them to, you know, get some match time and establish a brief character before, you know, getting their butts kicked. That's probably a better deal than, say, what the Young Lions and the New Japan Dojo have to go through, which is, you know, basically getting beat to shreds by Suzuki and any other heel wrestler who wants to take out their anger on them.
Yeah, so Cobb, he'll be the unofficial 2018 top prospect. He didn't win a tournament. It's not official. He's not on the Wikipedia page. But unofficially, he's the 2018 winner, falling in the lineage of Josh Woods, Leo Rush, Donovan Dijak, Hansen, Matt Taven, and Mike Bennett.
Yeah.
So that's quite the list.
It's pretty good company he's keeping, and just by declaring it so.
Yeah, well, the commentators, you know, Rick Abani and Caprice basically were like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. <That's clear.
laughs> He wins by default, Mike.
That's really the only part of this running gag that doesn't quite work for me. And that, like, Caprice, whatever. We know that Caprice, you know, appreciates a good underhanded tactic when it's effective. But, you know, Ian tends to play by the rules and does not tend to celebrate those who flout the rules or the conventions. You know, he's your good guy commentator who, you know, sticks to that script. So it kind of. Ian's rolling along just like everybody else is, just like, yeah, this is great.
Well, that's This is the lawless wasteland that has become ROH ever since Bully Ray was fired as enforcer back in May, and we haven't had any sort of authority figure since then. Joe Koff hasn't reappeared, and it's pretty much just like Ian and Todd Sinclair. It seems like they're just kind of trying their best to enforce the show, and that's it. There's nobody else.
I mean, to Ian's credit, Jeff Cobb is incredibly impressive, and I would declare him, you know, future.
You declare him anything he wanted to be declared.
Basically. Like, he can take whatever crowns and badges and sashes that he... Cobb can march into a beauty pageant and grab that sash. Like, give him whatever he wants.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
Yeah, so now the question is, okay, his little intro, beating up the rookie stage is over, so now what?
Yeah.
Do we book him in, like, enhancement matches? Is he going to be treated like some of these other people where we won't see him again for another 3 weeks on TV, and then he beats Cheeseburger, and then he goes away for another 2 weeks, and then comes back and faces Eli Isom? Or do they do something big with him from the start? We have this big pay-per-view on Friday, and Cobb is a huge name for his work in everywhere. He just won the PWG Battle of Los Angeles.
Yes.
He was literally a god in Lucha Underground. He's done stuff in New Japan. I mean, does he show up Friday and do something huge? Like, really make an impact?
Okay, so this may bleed into our predictions, but I will go ahead and say it. He is slated to appear at the New Japan Fighting Spirit Unleashed show on Sunday. That is in San Francisco. Was San Francisco? I think so. Long Beach. Apologies. Long Beach. So he is going to be at that show, along with several other guys who are also going to be at the Friday night pay-per-view in Las Vegas and the TV taping the following day. So I don't want to say that everything is connected and necessarily, you know, lots of guys share cards and then don't share cards the next day, but I would not be surprised if we saw Cobb on the pay-per-view, and I certainly won't be surprised if he's in, like, the set of episodes that come from that taping right afterwards.
Oh, yeah, he has to be at the TV tapings on Saturday. There's no way.
I'll save the second part of my prediction. I'll save the second part of my theory for the predictions.
Okay. Yeah, he hasn't factored into my predictions as of yet, but I feel like I'm just going to go on the record and say that I think they should do something big with him from the start. I don't want enhancement matches.
Yeah.
I don't want a feud with Cheeseburger. I want, you know, I want to see him versus Adam Page or Chris Sabin or something like that. Like somebody with some weight.
He's not somebody who needs his reputation built. Like, not even in the way that, like, they've done, they might want to do the same with him that they've done with Gresham, in that, like, they have built reputation on top of reputation, but Cobb's coming in there with all manner of clout. Like, they don't need to have enhancement matches to establish that he's a star. Like, they just need to put him in the right storyline and do it fairly quickly. And that I will put a pin on, because that's going to go into my predictions.
Okay. Well, opening contest this week on TV, Best Friends versus The Boys. I fully agree with you. When the show opened with Dalton Castle's music, I was so excited. I was like, wow, yeah, we're wondering when Dalton's going to be healthy, when he's going to be back on TV, what he's going to do when he returns. All excited. And then when The Boys come out, it was deflating.
Yeah, I hate to say that, because they're, you know, such good boys, and they're fun. They're always fun to watch wrestle. And I was actually kind of surprised how much fun this match in particular was. But yeah, I missed Dalton Castle even more than I realized. And I knew that I missed, like, I actively know that I missed seeing Dalton Castle. But man, having that music, that musical cue, and just, I've heard that he has come back, or he's coming back. He's slated to come back at some point, very soon, if not already. But it can't be soon enough, because I really do deeply miss him now. That being said, this was a pretty entertaining match. And the boys are kind of filling in, or I mean, the boys as a tag team, what are your thoughts? Do you like them as a tag team? Like, do you enjoy watching their matches?
Yeah, they're not bad. They're not treated as serious threats. Mm-hmm. That was my thing in this match. On the one hand, you could be like, it took Best Friends 7 minutes to beat these guys. Like, they're comedy players, essentially. But they did a good job in that sense, where it looked like there was more than one occasion when Best Friends could have had the match won following a move, and the other boys just at the last second book the pin. It was that kind of thing. So the match getting delayed was mostly due to breaking up pinfalls rather than kicking out a big move.
Yeah, absolutely. And also from them just evading being grasped onto, Coleman, I think, did a really good job of just making mention of how fast they are, how small they are, how, like, you know, so it makes them kind of slippery and, like, hard to grasp and hard to catch for, you know, the Best Friends. So some of that is just like them evading it. But once both Chucky and Beretta get their hands on them, like, it's pretty obvious who's got the advantage.
Yeah. And it's weird. I've seen Best Friends so much. I've seen Chucky T wrestle a lot when Beretta was there on the sidelines. And still, I feel like they still need these kind of matches for me for some reason. Because even though I watch every single ROH event, when they hit their finishers at the end, I didn't know the names of them. I didn't know which was which. I was like, oh, that's the Dude Buster? That's the Awful Waffle?
Yeah, I'm still relearning some of that myself. And I will say, it's a jarring difference, not necessarily in their moveset because it's fairly the same, but so they've been involved with the latest New Japan tour, the Destruction Tour, and the last couple of nights of the tour, they had tag matches against a Killer Elite Squad. So Lance Archer, Davey Boy Smith Jr., and you could not get opposites. You could not get a bigger opposite to the boys than Killer Elite Squad. So it's been interesting to watch this match compared to those matches and see how the Best Friends' moveset compare, like how it differs or just how they look different when they're being used on guys who are like three times the size of the boys.
Yeah, and we still know nothing about Best Friends other than they're friends and they hug.
From what
I've heard, they're great on the mic and they're hilarious, but we never see that in ROH. I don't know why nobody ever hands them a microphone.
We don't get to see much of that personality in ROH, and I'm not entirely sure why, because they sure as heck do have like that. They have that reputation. They have that, you know, they have their rapport. They have their own show on High Spots. They do some of that stuff in promo for New Japan. ROH should probably take advantage of that because the Best Friends have an online following based more on their non-wrestling stuff than they do on their wrestling.
And with Motor City Machine Guns being gone, their thing no more, the Best Friends are the perfect fit to sort of take that spot, fill that vacancy left by the Machine Guns.
Yeah, definitely.
They have the same fan base, I'd assume, same sort of levels of experience and familiarity with the Bucks and with these other teams. So, yeah, they should definitely try to make us care more about Best Friends or just let us know who they are.
Yeah, and again, like, the Best Friends have an online following that has more to do with their personalities and their back and forth and their, like, interviews and stuff than even the wrestling itself. So not to say that it doesn't count at all, because they've done really good work with PWG and other places, but it just doesn't make any sense for ROH not to take advantage of the skills that both Chucky and Trent bring, that are, you know, aside from what they can do in ring.
Yeah, and they're going to be part of the Big Ten Man Tag, teaming up with their Chaos stablemates.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that and what that means and what it could mean for ROH, because beyond that, it just feels like, I mean, unless that leads to something, the only other real destination for any tag team would be Best Friends going after the tag titles. So them and Briscoes or them and SCU at some point, which they could do. But again, I feel like they need a lot more characterization if you're going to put them up against the Briscoes.
Yeah, they have to get reestablished within ROH before they can like do a big match against the Briscoes. I mean, just it's solely like there's a little bit of rust there just because they haven't worked as a tag team in ROH for months.
Yeah, and the boys will be boys.
No.
She'll go back and sit on the sidelines until Dalton returns, I'm guessing.
I mean, you know, they're staying active. They're probably helping Dalton through his recovery process.
Yeah, maybe we'll get a big boys versus dogs feud at some point.
That seems obvious, right? Like, that should happen. Where are the... Oh, God, I don't want to ask this question because I don't actually really care to see them.
You're asking who let the dogs out?
When will the dogs be let back in?
I want to say that they, at the last TV taping, they taped Will Ferrara versus Cheeseburger in a fight without honor. So that's got to be like 2 weeks time on TV, maybe.
Okay.
It's not next week. I feel like they would have mentioned it if it was. Yeah. So maybe 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks from now.
I'm okay with that because I actually think Will Ferrara is a perfectly fine wrestler and divorced of the, or at least a little bit apart because they're, you know, Brett will always be there on the side, but like, Given some independence from that gimmick, it's more fun to watch him. I know that you like the dogs, so I'm treading carefully.
Yeah, and again, I don't know why.
Everyone likes,
but I do.
Everyone's got a stupid gimmick that they like. Everyone's got at least one.
You know, like, I'm not into gross out, like, sophomore humor. I'm not into, like, Will Ferrell movies or old school or anything like that. But Three Stooges, I find hilarious. And it's basically the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, oh my gosh, absolutely. And at some points, even like more sophomoric.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't ask me.
No, I think everybody is entitled to have their dumb, silly, funny things. I'm sure, I'm blanking on what mine are, but I know that I have them. And believe me, I have more than one, so.
Yes, just go scroll through Emily's Twitter timeline.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, you'll find all that. Listen to my recent appearance on a new podcast, and you'll hear a lot about the stupid things in wrestling I like all the butts.
Well, our last match on this week's show was Kenny King versus Adam Page. Kenny King is, I guess he's officially feuding with Bullet Club now.
Yeah, he's picking those fights.
He's doing a one-on-one feud against the Bullet Club stable. It all started. Austin Aries told Kenny King that he'll never be a main eventer and he'll never, like, be whatever, as long as he has a conscience. As long as he's a good guy and he's more concerned about the fans and about himself, he's never going to get anywhere in this business. And King took it to heart. He went against Marty Scurll to learn some villainous tactics, beat Scurll with the feet on the ropes. Now he's facing Adam Page, and he beats Adam Page with a handful of tights.
That's right.
So, there you go.
Yeah. So, King is making the probably most likable, softest heel turn in the world. And the commentary team is doing their job in kind of making that just justifying his decision making here. And honestly, King is not committing to heel persona in full because, you know, there's a number of things that a lot of guys do whenever they do transition to heel persona, including like costume changings and stuff. Like, but as far as Kenny goes, like, his look is still fairly, like, you know, clean cut and accessible. And, you know, this particular episode saw him, you know, coming out in Bachelor in Paradise inspired like beach gear, complete with pool floaties. But, you know, in general, he's still kind of playing up the likable aspects of him, just kind of adding those cheating elements to give him the advantage in the match when he needs it. I liked a lot about this match. His spinebuster is gorgeous as always. I love seeing that come out. I liked him going back to the ropes to try and get the pin, but getting called out by Turner. I thought that was a good moment where he's trying to repeat the same tactic, and he's, you know, basically what's been proven for other heels is, you know, Kenny had to learn, which is you can't always use the same specific cheat tactic. You have to diversify.
Unless you're Bully Ray, then a low blow always works.
Yeah, unless you're Bully Ray, and then a low blow always works.
But that's the veteran talent. He knows how to pull off a low blow without getting caught.
Yeah, I mean, he picks his moments quite right. King's
still new at this, yeah. So he tried for the same thing, and the ref caught him.
Yeah. I was a little surprised. And I don't know why I should be, because I clearly see the narrative that they're telling here. But I was a little surprised that he got the win on Paige, just given how much momentum Paige has.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it, it takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Well, Paige kind of has momentum everywhere except for ROH right now.
Oh, okay. That's kind of true.
He hasn't really done anything since he got the visual pin on Punishment Martinez at the last pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's true. You know, both guys who are just like super big stars all around are not getting a ton of momentum right now in ROH. And funnily enough, they're both guys that Kenny King has just defeated, Paige and Skrull.
But maybe that's not a coincidence. Maybe, you know, the reason that Paige and Skrull aren't getting a huge profile over here is because they're busy having a huge profile in other places.
Yeah, that's possible. Although, you know, Paige hasn't been as much of a part of the Destruction Tour. In fact, I'm not recalling him being part of any of the Destruction Tour off the top of my head, nor has Skrull, although at Fighting Spirit, the next big show for New Japan, they're both going to be involved. And Skrull is actually in contention for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title. So, you know, he's got to build in New Japan. It's funny to see them not. Obviously, there wasn't a lot they could do with Paige over the summer when he was in Japan. They filmed what they could in advance, but obviously they couldn't use him on tours and stuff. But yeah, they just don't have a whole lot around them right now.
No, but that's all right. That's the other problem with wrestling, right? Not everybody can get pushed at the same time.
That's true.
So I like the focus on King. I like that it is, like you said, it's a little bit multifaceted. It's a little bit complicated. He's not a full-on heel, and he doesn't want to be. He's not angry at the fans. He's not out to like destroy the world and burn it all down. He's just thinking, hey, if I gotta bend the rules a little bit here and there in order to pick up some wins and get somewhere in this company, okay, I'll do it. You know, he's not at the stage where he's ready to hit somebody over the head with a steel chair or low blow them, but a little bit, an extra tighter grip on the tights or some feet on the ropes, especially against someone like Skrull, who already tried to cheat against him multiple times. King's willing to do that, willing to bend that, and it plays into his character. We always said, for months, even when he was a babyface, he has these heel mannerisms. He's always his innate personality. He's cocky. Mm-hmm. He takes selfies with fans and the crowd. He likes to showboat. He obviously has a big head, being that he was on Bachelor and now Bachelor in Paradise. And yeah, having Coleman on commentary was a nice little bonus here. The only reason Coleman was on commentary was because Colt Cabana was off in Edinburgh at the Fringe Festival during this time. But it worked out nicely because Coleman and Kenny had the history together in the Rebellion. So Caprice is the perfect advocate to defend Kenny's actions on commentary and support him in his choices.
Yeah, absolutely. Coleman, obviously he's made appearances on commentary in the last several months, but this episode overall was a really good, had a lot of good Coleman moments, as did last week's episode as well. So it's kind of nice to have him back. And, you know, I miss Colt on commentary, but, you know, Coleman is a good person to have in Kenny's corner at this point.
Yeah, so King's doing this very slight, very gradual sort of heel turn, just testing the waters, more or less. But he's also doing this Bullet Club feud, it would seem. He beat Skrull now, he beat Paige. He mentioned in his promo last week he's on a Bullet Club begging spree.
Yes, he's like picking this fight too, because no one really came, no one from Bullet Club kind of came at him. He's picking this fight.
Yeah, from a booking standpoint, perfect sense. You want the fans to turn on King and to boo him? Put him up against Bullet Club. Nobody's going to boo Bullet Club in 2018.
Very rarely. And, you know, Coleman makes that point about that, like, King's recent heel turn on Skrull. He did one cheat thing to win, whereas Skrull cheated at least a couple of times, at least four or five times in the match, and was being prevented from cheating again when Kenny got the upper hand and was able to get the win. So, you know, it's funny how they're playing off the fact that, like, Bullet Club is having a hard time, like, keeping their heels. But they're also playing with that in Kenny, because, like, Kenny doesn't want to be a straight up heel. He still wants the crowd to like him, even when he's winning through underhanded tactics.
For now. But I'd have to think that he's going to reach the point a frustration of whatever, maybe his first loss in this new mindset will push him even farther backwards. And that's when we'll see him make the jump from holding the tights, feet on the ropes, to hitting somebody with a foreign object or low blowing somebody. That I think at some point Kenny's going to hit his breaking point, especially if the fans keep booing him and turning on him. If he gets booed in his hometown of Las Vegas on Friday,
oof,
what's that going to do to his ego?
Yeah, that match with Liger, and we'll talk about it, but like that match with Liger sets up some interesting things because, you know, Liger is a legend and beloved, and if King tries, you know, some of the dirty tactics on him, that could lead to a crowd turning on him.
Well, my other idea that came to me watching this and them talking about the Kenny King versus Bullet Club feud, he beat Skrull, he beat Page. So my first thought was, are we going to get like Kenny versus like Nick Jackson in a singles match or against Matt Jackson in a singles match on TV in the next couple weeks? I mean, that'd be really fun. We don't get to see the Bucks wrestle singles matches all that often. But then I remembered that signed for this Saturday at the TV tapings is Chase Owens.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, indeed. That would be really cool. And again, it's a Bullet Club member. So, like, Kenny gets to continue his Bullet Club bagging spree. That makes so much sense for an episode taping. It really does.
Yeah, I like that idea. And I would love to see him versus the Bucks in singles competition. If the Young Bucks entered Survival of the Fittest as singles wrestlers, that would be a lot of fun because we don't get to see that very often at all.
But have they ever done that?
That would be something different.
But have they ever done that?
Done like Survival of the Fittest?
Yeah.
I can't imagine because it's almost always, I don't have the stats in front of me right now, but no, it's a singles tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm less excited by the Bucks wrestling solo. Like I the matches I've seen when they've been split up, when they've wrestled on their own, are totally fine. But there's, you know, a dynamic missing that like gets complete, that you see the complete picture whenever they're together. So like for me, the idea of them wrestling single is just like a little less exciting than that. But it is a way to mix up and to allow King to continue his streak. At some point he's got to lose though.
Yeah. I'm only advocating for the Bucks solo matches as a novelty, as like a one-off. Cause I haven't seen that very much.
Yeah.
But yeah. So if he is feuding with Bullet Club and, you know, he's facing off against the singles wrestlers, does this whole thing lead to Kenny King versus Cody for the NWA title?
Okay, so that is an interesting question. I think that is a really logical step, right? Like if he defeats a fair number of Bullet Club members and gets to the point where he, you know, has enough heat as a heel, that challenge will make a lot of sense.
Yeah, Kenny, even at Final Battle, I think that would be a very good sort of undercard match, King and Cody for the NWA title. Bernard in one corner, Caprice Coleman in the other.
See, and that's interesting because I kept coming back to the idea that I thought Cody was going to be challenging for the world title by Fatal Battle. Final Battle.
Really? Challenging Lethal again?
Yeah, I was going back and forth. My theory this whole year has been that Skrull would end up with the title by the end of the year, but that's starting to feel less likely.
No, if we're making 3 month out predictions for Final Battle, I've got to go with Lethal versus Taven at this point.
Lethal versus Taven for Final Battle.
Yeah, the culmination of the Kingdom Conspiracy. Taven's been getting screwed out of his title, rightful title shot all year against Dalton. Now he's like off on the sidelines. He just main evented in a CMLL pay-per-view and had his head shaved. So I think he comes back from that with a vengeance.
A vengeance and a bald head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. All right. I will bring up one more nitpicky thing about this match. This is just...
Does it involve pool floaters?
It does. So as we were talking about, you know, King has not elevated to the point where he is using a foreign object in the ring to strike his opponent. That's, you know, probably a second level heel tactic. But he did bring with him a champagne bottle shaped a large like pool raft and a inner tube, a glittery like donut inner tube with him in reference to his time on Bachelor in Paradise. These toys did inevitably end up in Ring, but from Paige. Paige brought them in for whatever reason. I thought it was it's a funny thing for a guy like Paige to bring a pool floaty in with the intention of using it in some way or another. Because like, what can the pool float do that your giant fist can't? But
he was still just in the mindset of Joey Janela and All In and all that.
Right. Like, just take whatever is in front of you, whether it's a Cracker Barrel or a table
or an inflatable champagne
bottle. So, of course, they get used, and King mainly uses the big I think it's the champagne raft to block punches from Paige because Turner gets rid of the donut. But this leads to Paige coming back and superplexing King onto the raft, which got a huge pop and King sold as an injury. I think that this was a missed opportunity for an actually good no sell. I'm not a huge fan of no sells. I when they're done right, though, I absolutely love that moment. Some guys are better than others. There's, of course, you know, the king of no selling, Tomohiro Ishii, who, you know, basically is a brick wall. So like, no matter what you do, he's going to kind of no sell it because nothing can destroy him. That being said, I do think that a well-timed, no sell would have been at this point, because getting suplexed onto a floaty doesn't seem like it would be that bad. Obviously they're not like super thick and like it's not like a pillow or a mattress, but still I think this would have been a really good moment, and I was a little disappointed that King sold it as an actual impact rather than a no sell. The thing that I referred to on this one was there was a match between Kenny Omega and Yano during this year's G1. And I won't go into the reasons why, but Yano basically had the upper hand in this match. And he did as Yano tends to do. If anyone knows about Toru Yano, is he likes to take the turnbuckle pads off the turnbuckles pretty much within seconds of the match beginning. He was able to do this and was able to suplex Kenny Omega onto these turnbuckle pads. And there's a great moment after this happens where Omega impacts, goes to kind of like feel it, and then realizes that he's fine because he just got suplexed on a bunch of turnbuckle pads rather than on the mat or anywhere else. I think that similar moment here would have been really effective, would have been also a good crowd pop, but that's just my particular, maybe it's something stupid that I like.
Well, I think we need a rematch in a pool.
Yes, absolutely. You know, a lot of these wrestlers, as we've seen through lots of watching Being the Elite, lots of these wrestlers practice their moves in the pool. Why don't we see a wrestling match in a pool?
Yeah, how has nobody – somebody's done this, I'm sure.
Okay.
Send us the footage, talkinghonor@gmail.com. I'm sure DDT or AIW or Chikara, somebody's done this.
Well –
but not often enough.
Yeah, not enough for it to be like for me to remember it. But like DDT does campsite wrestling, so there is some stuff that ends up happening in like Lakeside. But yeah, like there should be a wrestling match where they have like the ring in a pool. That seems like.
The water level is right up to the top of the apron.
Yes. Okay.
So there's no floor. It's just if you get. Oh, like a battle royal. You get thrown over the top rope, splash.
This is great. Someone must have done this.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how I'm not getting paid to write this.
You know, me too.
Instead of a ladder match, a diving board match. We have to bounce off the diving board and grab the title.
a water slide match.
Yes, a no quit match, but instead of, or an I quit match, but instead of I quit, you have to drown your opponent.
Oh my gosh. We're starting to get really dangerous territory here.
We're entering Adam Page territory here with the murder.
Yes.
All right. Well, this Friday, it's Death Before Dishonor 16 in Kenny King's hometown of Las Vegas, Nevada. So we have 7 matches officially announced for the card now. It took us a while to get there, but we're there. There might be one or two bonus matches. There might be not a match, just like an unplanned segment with Jeff Cobb destroying somebody or Jonathan Gresham being interviewed and that leading to something. We'll find out.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
But the official card. Kenny King versus Jushin Thunder Liger. The only singles match on the card, not for a title.
Yeah. Kind of surprising.
Kind of interesting. Yeah. But yeah, this is all about the Kenny King heel turn. Obviously, Liger is just playing the role of somebody who's very popular and very beloved.
Yes.
Right? King needs to face somebody beloved, especially in his hometown. If there's anybody who can get the crowd to his hometown crowd not to cheer King, it might be Jushin.
Yeah, I don't see the crowd turning on him maybe the way that they would even want him them to, but I do see King winning.
But how?
That's your specialty.
Okay, well, we've seen feet on the ropes, we've seen hook of the tights so far, right? So my solution is King twists Liger's mask.
Ooh.
So that he can't see, and then hits the Roar of Flesh for the win.
Ooh, all right, I like that.
It's on the same heel level as hooking the tights.
Yes.
And it takes advantage of the fact, like, the unique fact that Jushin Liger is a masked wrestler, whereas ROH doesn't have any of those.
Yes, absolutely. And it's not like, it doesn't blow King up to heel tactic, probably level 3 or 4, which is removing a mask.
Yeah, he still has plausible deniability. Afterwards, he'd be like, it was an accident. I didn't mean to, you know, I was going for a headlock. I didn't mean to, like, blind him and whatever.
Yeah. Exactly. I think that that's kind of what defines Kenny's, like, heel tactic level 1 right now, is that, like, there needs to be some level of plausible deniability.
Yeah, everything he's done afterwards, like, when somebody catches him, like, with the feet on the ropes, he can just laugh it off and smirk. You're like, oh, you caught me, sort of thing. You can't do that if, like, you get caught kicking somebody between the legs or smashing them over the head with a beer bottle.
Yeah, it's like the difference between being like, oh, I'm being a little bad, to being like, you're a bad man.
Yeah, he's Dennis the Menace. He's not Reggie Mantle. I don't know. So, there you go. That's that one. We both are convinced Kenny will win. Match number 2. Flip Gordon and Colt Cabana versus Bully Ray and Silas Young in a tables match. Everybody hates Bully. Even Silas. They were bickering still this week, even when they were teaming together, and even when they picked up the win. There was still some tension there. You know, Silas is kind of the weird fit in this match. I'd thrown out the idea of some sort of tag match a couple of weeks ago. Not in this combination, for sure. It's kind of weird. Silas and Flip have a history together, that's for sure. Silas and Colt, not so much.
Yeah, not really. I mean, aside from Bully and Colt's bad blood, like, nobody ever has any, like, bad blood with Colt Cabana. Not now.
No. Not in wrestling.
Not in, yeah.
In the courtroom, different
cool.
Story.
Hot topics.
Silas appears to be committed to being a heel. We thought for a week there maybe he'd be turning babyface, but it seems like instead he just was, like, doing a U-turn back hard into heel territory. So, I don't know. You want me to go first with my predictions?
Yeah, you go first.
Okay, I think Silas is the heel. Nobody likes Bully. This is a big pay-per-view match. You want the baby faces to get the big shiny moment. So I'm going to say Silas walks out on Bully as payback for when Bully walked out on Silas.
Ooh.
Further underscores the fact that Silas is just like, I'm not friends with anyone. Ooh, you know what? Next week on TV, it's Silas and the Bouncers challenging for the 6-man titles. If they were willing to go full-fledged with this and really make Silas a loner, if he, like, kind of abandoned the Bouncers, not walked out on them in the match, but just kind of, like, said, like, he's done with them and he doesn't want to be their friend anymore or their drinking buddy anymore, that would really enforce Silas as being like a top tier heel.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you've got him going.
And differentiate him from the Kingdom and some of these other crews that always have their goon.
Yeah. Huh, okay.
That just came to mind. But anyway, yeah, I think Silas walks out on Bully, and Bully takes a 3D through a table.
Yeah, I have a very similar prediction in that I kind of predicted the same, that like Silas Young would walk out on Bully, and the guy, Gordon and Cabana, would get the upper hand.
There you go. It might not be a 3D. It might be like a, you know, flip with a 450 or something through a
table. Yeah.
But I feel like they'd be hard-pressed to avoid the irony of Bully taking his own finishing move through a table.
Yeah, exactly. I think that because so much of Bully Ray's storyline is not reliant on that single like win or loss, they can still continue to work on this. They've proven that they don't really care about the outcomes of the matches when it comes to Bully Ray. They'll keep using this storyline regardless.
Oh yeah, he gets himself disqualified all the time, and he doesn't care. He just wants to humiliate people and beat people up. So.
Yeah, so it's better for them to give a win to Flip and to Colt in this way and get like advance their, you know, give them a pop rather than like worrying about what this might do to the Bully Ray storyline in the long run, because they clearly don't care.
And bonus prediction, I think we're heading to Bully and Colt one-on-one at Final Battle.
Oh, all right.
I think that's the longer payoff. There's a reason we haven't gone to that singles match yet. And I think it's not, you know, ask somebody to make a list of like dream matches from the early 2000s or whatever. It's not one of the first ones that would jump to mind, but it would be an intriguing one if Bully's committed to wrestling like a proper match and not just whatever, hitting people with a chain and getting disqualified 4 minutes in. It's a match that like a lot of people would have never thought they had would ever see.
Yeah, most definitely. It's not something that like I would. It's not a match that I have pined for, but it's definitely a match that were to be announced, I would be very excited to see.
Yeah, very intriguing one, and especially to see how they would work together. I think it'd be a lot of fun. Bully's shown he can do comedy, but he also plays a strong villain, and Colt's nothing if not heroic and comedic.
Yes, precisely. So I'm down for that. But there's definitely, you know, that sounds like a good like mid-card pay-per-view match.
All right. Match 3. Sumi Sakai and the Women of Honor World Championship versus Tennille Dashwood. This is one that felt inevitable. Mm-hmm. You know, Tennille has the second best record in Women of Honor besides Suki. Suki has the best record in the entire company in 2018. So you had to figure they'd face off eventually at some point. They're both good friends. They've teamed together successfully on a bunch of live events now. They like and respect each other. And so they're facing off for the title. You got anything else?
No, that's about it. As inevitable as this match feels, I felt like that it was going to happen before, you know, probably Death Before Dishonor is a good timing for it. I wish that they had built a little bit more towards it. I really do. We got like the one challenge scene with them in ring. I understand that they're kind of going for a match built on like, you know, respect and Sumi trying to prove that she is the, you know, the best in Women of Honor. And to do so, she needs to go through Tennille to feel like that she's really at the top. That being said, I just, there's something about this match that maybe partially because of its inevitability, it doesn't have a whole lot of steam for me. So I do have Dashwood winning. I think that they have been really good to Sumi as far as keeping the title on her for as long as they have since April. I think that she's, they've really like, she's won every match. Her record is so good. But I do think that they want to start working Tennille in more and more, and this is the way to do it.
Okay. Well, this is the first time we're going to differ.
Okay.
I think because this is such a big match or feud or rivalry in the Women of Honor division, and because we didn't have a lot of steam going into this, just kind of the one interaction in the ring, I think this is the start of a long-term thing. And so I'm going to go with... I said this last week on the show. I'm going to go with Sumi winning and Tennille turning heel out of frustration.
Okay.
Maybe not immediately afterwards, maybe on television, but I think that's where we go. We need to get a couple of pay-per-views out of this one.
Yeah, and I think I said that I think she will win, but I think she will turn heel, or at least turn to heel tactics to do so. And that I'm still kind of sticking with that.
Okay. Match number 4, Punishment Martinez versus Chris Sabin for the television title. And I'd say that next week's television is kind of a spoiler.
I'm blanking. What's next week's television?
They announced next week on TV.
Martinez. Okay. Yeah.
Punishment Martinez or Chris Sabin defending the TV title against Dojo Pro Black Belt Aaron Solo.
That's right.
Now, the problem here is that this episode of television was already taped like a month and a half ago. And it was Martinez versus Solo. So I'm guessing Chris Sabin doesn't win.
I'm guessing he doesn't win the title.
And I'm guessing Aaron Solo doesn't either.
Yeah, I'm gonna. That's a big, big likelihood.
So here's something where ROH is like weird, like super delayed TV schedule hurts them. I mean, they tape these things, and some of these episodes, like some of this matches they tape, don't see TV until like 5 or 6 weeks later. And it's tough. It's tough to build a schedule around that, especially when wrestling is so heavily... Wrestling's at its best when it's full of surprises and unpredictability.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I was aware that that match was coming up and that it had been taped, but I guess I wasn't aware that it had gone the way that they had publicized it going. So...
Yeah, I only knew because they mentioned it during the show.
Yeah. Man. Okay. Well, I did predict Martinez winning for whatever reason. I guess I just knew that was kind of that had happened.
Yeah. To be fair, even if that hadn't been announced, I still would have gone with Martinez.
Yeah.
Because Sabin's only been a singles wrestler in ROH for like a month. He's only won maybe one or two matches. It would seem really premature for him to defeat this big monster.
And have a TV title.
Yeah, that's way too... If he does get the title someday, great. But this seems way too...
ROH weird. Likes to do their title... It seems to me, and there's probably exceptions to this, as there always are, but ROH likes to do their title runs a little bit... And they don't tend to just like bring in someone and like build them up right away by giving them a title. New Japan is very different in that way, in that like when guys get introduced as like new junior heavyweights or a new junior heavyweight team, or when they like rise up and go into heavyweight class, a lot of times they'll do that and they'll make that kind of like their debut will be in a match getting a belt. They work the titles in a little bit differently, especially at the junior level. ROH doesn't necessarily do that.
Yeah, they rarely use the belt to make the man. Mm-hmm. Usually, if somebody's winning the title, it's because they've already been established as sort of a... It takes them to the next level. Like, it took Martinez from something to something else when he won the television title. But he was already well-established as a threat and as a bigger name, as a big player at that point. He'd already challenged for the world title earlier this year, stuff like that, right?
Right.
I don't think Sabin's not at that level where he's shown that he his character is at a state where he's ready for a title run. I don't think. As far as I'm concerned, Sabin's only slightly ahead of Shane Taylor and Josh Woods by now.
Which is a shame because, you know, like, but that's the sad truth of it. When you go from being in a tag team that has the kind of run that Motor City had to being a singles wrestler, having to stand on your own, like you do have to kind of do that rebuilding. And I think that it seems that they're clearly committed to rebuilding with Sabin, but he's going to have to put in the time.
Yeah. And maybe Sabin and Jeff Cobb feuding for a month or two would be good in that sense. It would give both of them a chance to show off who they are and have Sabin really have somebody strong to work against.
I mean, give me a month of handsome battles. That's fine. I'm good. That's great.
All right. As long as it doesn't lead to one of those, was it a blindfold match? Jake Roberts did one where they had hoods over
no.
heads and had to wrestle.
No,
it was Jake the Snake versus Rick Martel.
Guys, no, don't do that. Don't cover up the goods.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it too every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
All right, our next title match, the Briscoes versus Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian. For the tag titles, SCU want the gold because they're afraid that if they don't get it, they're screwed. They're going to be fired after Final Battle. And maybe if they're holding championship gold, they can't be fired. That's their theory. Beyond that, they don't like each other. They've been fighting a lot. They've been brawling a lot. SCU have picked up pretty much every win outside of this match,
yes.
Right? They pinned the Briscoes at All In. They've beaten them in singles matches on TV, once by disqualification, but a win's a win. So all the momentum is behind SCU, which is why I'm convinced the Briscoes
yeah,
win.
Yeah, me too. I think for me, the All In win was what kind of clinched it to me, because SCU has had such a just major rise in profile and in fan base in the last year. And All In was a great way for them to capitalize on that and get a big win in that special before the official card. But I think that in exchange, like, ROH is sticking with the Briscoes as their tag champs for now. They just put on the website, I think I just saw it on the website this morning, the Briscoes are past 1,000 days as tag champs. So that's something.
Yeah, that's all the reigns combined.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. And they already have the record for most. They're at like 7 title reigns, and second place is like the Young Bucks with 2.
Wow.
Or 3 maybe. But it's a big draw.
And that would be all the reason to me to think that, okay, well, maybe this will change hands. Maybe, you know, the Briscoes, they're building up how many days total they've been champs, because they are, you know, building towards a changeover. But I think that they probably are, but that's not going to happen at Death Before Dishonor.
Well, an SCU story is they want gold so that they can't get fired after Final Battle. Way back in like January, Joe Koff told them, after Final Battle, you're done with this company, I'm sick of you. So it's like the Iron Man match. It's more exciting if they go right down to the
division, right?
Right. If it's like, if at Final Battle, they're challenging for the titles again, and it's like, win this match, your careers are saved. Lose and you're gone from.
Yeah, like, you don't watch a 2 out of 3 falls match and like the guy wins the same guy wins the first two. Like, you gotta build this right to the end. You gotta get right up to the deadline.
Yes, we need the tension.
Yeah.
So, Briscoes win, but the feud continues. So maybe they pull some underhanded stuff for. I don't think they get themselves disqualified, but they have to do something to prolong the feud. They win, but not in a way that, like... SCU loses in a way where they're owed a rematch. That's what I'm trying
to
say.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah, I'm on board with that. Because I don't think it's time for SCU yet. I think, why waste this build?
Our next match, another tag match. 10-man tag. It's Bullet Club, Cody, Marty, Adam, Matt, and Nick versus Chaos, Chuck, Trent, Rocky, Tomohiro, and Kazuchika. No real story behind this that I know of. You follow New Japan. I hear rumblings that Chaos is...
Chaos is in trouble. Chaos. Yeah, Chaos is very aptly named right now. Yeah.
All right, inform me, or how it relates to Kazuchika and Tomohiro and those guys.
Well, so we had the final night of the Destruction Tour this past Sunday, and at that, Kazuchika Okada had a rematch against Hiroshi Tanahashi for the right to challenge at Wrestle Kingdom, a right that Tanahashi had won because he won the G1. Their match, Okada and Tanahashi's match, in the G1, their A block, they drew, it's been a couple of years since Tanahashi had a clean win, had an actual win over Okada, and they had a rematch in hopes that, with Okada hoping that he could win and get that challenge rights. So Tanahashi was actually the victor, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't caught up. But after the match, Tanahashi was attacked by Jay White, who was introduced into Chaos right after the beginning of the year, right after New Year's Dash in January. So Jay White attacks Tanahashi and then proceeds to attack Okada, setting off a whole chain of events, including other people getting involved. Jay White attacked Rocky when Rocky refused to give him a chair. And then, of course, Jay White was about to strike Okada with a chair and was interfered with by Gato, also known as was a second to Okada for many years. They had a parting of ways at the end of the G1 with Okada announcing he would be standing on his own and Gato would no longer be cornering for him or seconding for him. And it turns out that is because Gato has changed his alliances and is now fully behind the Switchblade. So that leaves Chaos in a bit of a disrepaired state, with it not entirely being clear if Jay and Gato are staying in Chaos and splitting loyalties, or if they are just splitting off from Chaos, which is also a possibility. It is not clear if there is a loyalty split and Chaos splits in a similar way to Bullet Club, who will be on what side. Made all the more interesting by the fact, so this folds into this 10-man match at Death Before Dishonor, because Okada is within this team, is tagging with Rocky Romero and Best Friends, both of whom he has no issues, seemingly no issues with, and Rocky seems to remain loyal to Okada, but Ishii is the kind of random factor here. Ishii will be tagging with Jay White at Fighting Spirit Unleashed in Long Beach on Sunday. So there's a lot of story here that hasn't been told just yet. And right now there's a lot of questions that I'm not sure we're even going to get clear answers to before the end of the year. So Chaos is kind of is especially well named right now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Jay White is almost definitely not going to be at Death Before Dishonor. He could make a surprise appearance, but highly unlikely.
But Bullet Club and Chaos are both in kind of similar states where, like, you've got guys who are kind of like, you've got a faction that is not super strong. It's weird and it's just kind of interestingly timed that this 10-man match between Bullet Club and Chaos is happening in the time when both factions are probably in their most tenuous states in New Japan.
Oh, in New Japan, but Bullet Club USA is probably the tightest they've been.
I mean, Bullet Club USA has no role issues because Bullet Club USA is the same guys who've been, I mean, primarily Bullet Club USA is who you're seeing in this match. You know, Kenny and Chase and Yujiro, like, they're still just mainly in New Japan.
Yeah, I mean, they were, Bullet Club America was in turmoil for a long time with Cody and his actions. Even going as recently as Supercard of Honor when it was Cody versus Kenny. But coming out of All In, they're riding on a high. They're all reunited again. They all like each other. So it's going to be the five of them together. And yeah, because Jay White and Gato probably aren't going to be at this show, all of that stuff with Chaos probably isn't going to be relevant to this match.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously I don't see Jay White and Gato being there at all, but I do wonder how that storyline might be bleeding over, like might bleed over just in, well, you know, it's going to get referenced in commentary. And I'm wondering if Chaos is going to be a united front or if the commentary will be that everything's cool with Chaos. But I don't think it will be. I think that that story comes in a little bit.
So maybe they just do the classic where some sort of accident results in Okada hits Romero or something and Rocky gets pinned and that's how they lose. And then there's just like bad feelings or it was an accident kind of thing between Chaos.
Well, I guarantee
it feels a little too Bullet Club.
Yeah. But that's the state of things right now for Chaos too. So I wouldn't say it's solely the property of Bullet Club to do something like that. All right.
Yeah, I do think Bullet Club picks the win. Rocky seems like the likeliest target to get pinned.
Yes, yeah. I mean, either best friend like either Chuck or Trent maybe, but I think Rocky is probably.
But they make the most appearances in ROH right now, right?
Yeah, so and
they're building them up as a tag team, so to have one of them pin.
Yes, and when Rocky's team loses in New Japan or pretty much anywhere, Rocky always eats the pin.
Yeah, that my only bonus thing to this is I'm wondering if this relates to six-man titles, because Cody and the Young Bucks are the six-man champions. I think if this led to Rocky Romero and Best Friends challenging for the six-man titles in the future, I'd be okay with that. Rocky used to make he used to be a full-time ROH guy. He's rarely around these days, but he could definitely come back for a stint. I'm sure he has his American visa or citizenship or whatever, so he can make more regular appearances for ROH than Ishii or Okada can, for sure. So Rocky and Best Friends against Cody and the Bucks for the six-man titles, maybe at October or November?
Yeah. All right. I'm down with that.
And then our last match officially on the card, Jay Lethal versus Will Ospreay for the world title. There's no story here. Lethal put out an open challenge and Will Ospreay sent in a video a la American Idol. Ospreay was chosen. They're going to have a match. It'll be good. Lethal will win with a lethal injection.
Yes.
Kind of on paper seems like a bit of a deflating end to the pay-per-view card, but it'll be a great match.
It's going to have an obvious outcome, but it'll be a good match to watch. I'm always interested to see a flyer versus Jay Lethal, and Jay Lethal isn't a flyer necessarily, but he can move and he can fly a bit, and that's kind of what Ospreay is really known for in his abilities. So it's always interesting to see Lethal, someone more grounded than Ospreay, whose arsenal is filled with a lot of.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe we'll get some sort of big angle after this, or spinning out of this. After the match, the Kingdom attack both men or something. We get the Kingdom versus Lethal, Gresham, and Ospreay the next night at the TV tapings or something. I have to assume that however this plays out, in the aftermath, we get a sense of where Lethal's heading towards final.
Yeah.
Whether it's Taven or Jeff Cobb or somebody else.
Yeah, and again, I don't see it with Jeff Cobb, not at this point. I mean, that again, they make these kind of introductions work in New Japan. They make these kind of entries into the roster of New Japan and like all the time, so for like people challenging for titles.
Cobb won the Lucha Underground title on his debut match.
Well, yeah, so I mean
he's specifically been treated as that kind of
Definitely. I mean, he didn't win, but one of his major New Japan appearances this year was at the G1 special in San Francisco, where he challenged Goto for the Never Open Weight title, and he didn't win, but like that was a special match. It was a US match, which for the Western market, and he got to challenge for a title. He just got the challenge.
Yeah, so that's our card. Coming out of this, our next big show is Glory by Honor on October 13th in Baltimore. So, that's only that's 2 weeks after this one. So there better be some big developments here, because we've got a quick turnaround time to get things built up for that show. But yeah, that's the card. I'll be doing live coverage for The Torch Friday night on the website. Next week on our podcast, we'll give our full thoughts on the show, match by match, give our full rundown, and see who is right and who is wrong about all our predictions. And also next week on television, Cody and the Young Bucks defend the six-man titles against Silas Young and the Bouncers, and Punishment Martinez versus Aaron Solo for the television title.
Ooh.
Which will be interesting.
Yeah, I haven't seen Solo since his work on Dojo Pro, so
yeah,
finally get to see the culmination of that.
This is the epilogue to the Dojo Pro season 1.
Oh boy.
So you can find me on Twitter at Talking Honor.
You can find me on Twitter at ForkedPGH. And if you have any interest in hearing more of me, I guested on another fellow wrestling fan's first episode of her podcast, which you can find linked on my Twitter. I was also a guest on the Indie Wrestling Mayhem show last Wednesday, talking about intergender wrestling, bringing up a lot of the favorites that I brought up here. You can find that also linked on my Twitter. So if you have not had your fill of me this week, and you can also listen to our latest episode of Elite Repeat, which was posted last week. Yeah,
we do a VIP podcast called Elite Repeat, where we watch old episodes of Being the Elite and sort of annotate them, give full detail on what was happening in the world of wrestling at the time, histories of the wrestlers involved, all that stuff. We don't promote that.
Yeah, we really don't plug that enough here.
Yeah, so that's that. You can send your emails to talkinghonor@gmail.com. Send us your thoughts on Madison Rayne signing with ROH, who Jeff Cobb's first feud should be now that he's in the company, where the Kenny King Bullet Club feud goes, and your predictions on all the winners for Death Before Dishonor, and whether or not this is the first step to Final Battle. And if so, what is your final battle card looking like?
Send us your predictions and tell us how wrong we are about our predictions, and then we can fight about it next week.
Yes.
In a pool.
Surrounded by a pool.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Love.